It's over.
Game over.
Game over, man.
It's over.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks postgame show.
Give me the postgame.
On the Blackhawks Radio Network, here's Charlie Remeliotis.
Welcome in to the Blackhawks postgame show. Charlie Remeliotis here at the United Center, where the Blackhawks squandered a two-goal lead to the Edmonton Oilers and fell 4-3 on Hockey Night in Canada in Chicago. Sad organ music as I turn to my right and bring in Troy Murray. We had some positive organ music the last time we were here, but it's tough loss for Chicago. That first period was an excellent start to the hockey game, where Teuvo Teravainen scores, Nick Foligno scores, Hawks go up 2-0. But the Edmonton Oilers are the best team in the NHL in the second period, and Troy, they made Chicago pay, and in that period specifically.
Yeah, but you were still in a decent position. You know, you're tied 3-3, but you know, I go back to, again, some mistakes. I thought that the first period they were really focused in what they needed to do. Very few puck management issues. Their structure in their own end of the ice was excellent. They limited the Edmonton Oilers to 9 shots on goal. So they did what they needed to do to start this game, and that was one of the keys to the game. Get off to a good start, but good start doesn't mean anything unless you follow through and play a full 60 minutes. And again, you go back to the first shift of the second period, and you've just come off a real hard-working, good 20-minute effort. What is the focus going into the first shift, basically, of every guy, first 5 minutes of the second period? Mistake-free. Manage the puck. Stay on top of it. And I Mikheyev's done an excellent job this season. He's the only player that's a plus player on the Blackhawks roster as it stands right now. He was plus 5 coming into the game tonight. But he turns a puck over at the blue line. It's a simple play to get that puck in behind the Oilers defenseman. The Oilers defenseman stand up, cut off the play at the blue line, and their transition comes back, and 22 seconds into the second period, they score. You've given the Edmonton Oilers life, and you don't want to do that to one of the best offensive teams with two of the best players in the world on their roster. And all of a sudden, things turned and quickly went against them. Yeah, they did create another goal. I think that was Donato's goal to give them a 3-1 lead. But you kind of planted the seed that, okay, we're going to come at you and we're going to work hard. And they just never regained the way that they played in the first period. In the third period, I thought the Oilers, you know, after they took the lead there, kind of shut things down and locked it up a little bit. And the Hawks were trying to get pucks out of the zone. But the Oilers didn't, you know, they didn't hang back. They had their defenseman pinch and the Blackhawks under their pressure. And they went in, they had forecheck 2 guys in deep there, and so they didn't allow D-to-D plays. And everything for the Blackhawks under pressure was around the boards, and the Hawks not able to get some clean plays with puck possessions. If they did get it out, you know, now you're just kind of chasing it because you don't have direct passes, and those exit plays, you know, weren't what they needed to be. And, you know, again, they just didn't have enough, and frustrating for them, I know. They put some pressure on with the goaltender on the bench, but too many times this season you've been in that same situation. So frustrating for the Hawks after, you know, a good start to this game, back-to-back. You can't say fatigue is there. It happens all the time, but they needed to be better in the second and third period because we talked about it, Charlie, after the first period, long from over.
Yeah, and we were talking about, too, in the second intermission, the third goal in Detroit last night, where it's a 2-1 hockey game and Filip Kurashev is the one that fails to get the puck in deep. That kind of led to the snowball effect of Detroit then scoring the fourth goal of the hockey game, kind of put the game out of reach. And similar in this one, you know, unfortunately the turnover at the blue line led just to open up the door for Edmonton to get some momentum.
You just can't make those plays. Those are just simple plays. That's nothing to do with structure. That's nothing to do with, you know, who's the better team. That's just a play that needs to be executed. And Mikheyev's been around enough to know that that puck has just got to get in deep, and he tried to make too much out of nothing there. And again, I'll say this all the time. If you're coming down and you've got speed through the neutral zone, if you can push the defense back, if you can go wide, You don't want to chip it in. You want to keep puck possession. But there's a time and a place, and if you don't have a play, you can't turn pucks over at the blue line, whether it's yours or the opposition blue line. And that's exactly what happened. That was the first shift of the second period. And I guarantee you, the guys on the bench, I mean, they've been through it before. They've seen it before. And, you know, the veteran guys, you know, get frustrated when you see those mistakes. And those are mistakes that are repetitious. And those are mistakes that you should be able to clean out of your game. And that's what Sorensen's looking for. Eliminate those mental mistakes that have been haunting these guys over the last several games.
If I told you before this game that Connor McDavid was going to be held to 0 points, one shot on goal, and he'd be a minus two, and Edmonton only had one power play in this game, I mean, realistically, you'd think, okay, the Blackhawks would have a really, not really good chance to win the hockey game, but you'd think they have a decent chance to come away with 2 points, and unfortunately, they come away with zero. You know, 3 or 4 nights, whatever it was, from having McKinnon in town, holding him to 0 points, and so they've done a good job of limiting some of the best players in the world. They were able to get the 2 points against Colorado, but they can't find a way to get two against Edmonton tonight.
Dickinson did an excellent job, along with his line mates, Foligno and Teravainen, and they had a job to do, and that was to shut down McDavid. The next matchup was not favorable for the Blackhawks because it was Draisaitl up against Connor Bedard, and Connor was minus two in this one, and he was Leon Draisaitl had a couple of shifts, and he was very effective in this game. So, you know, you look at one matchup, and then you look at another matchup, and those head-to-head matches went one way or the other. The second, you know, Connor Bedard was very quiet in this game. He had only one shot on goal and was minus two. So you look at Connor McDavid, keeping him quiet. If the Edmonton Oilers say, okay, well, you know, the Blackhawks don't have a lot of offense firepower in their lineup compared to some other teams, that if we can keep Bedard off the score, it gives us a better chance to win. And that's what happened. But you did have some good secondary scoring in the first two goals of the game from the Dickinson line. Foligno, goal and assist. Teravainen, goal and assist. He's been hot as of late, and I thought Dickinson was excellent in the way that he approached the game and shut down McDavid.
By the way, Connor Bedard, his point streak of 9 games snapped tonight.
Yep.
And that was it. That was the longest active point streak in the NHL, longest of his career as well. And so I'm sure he's disappointed, too, that not that snap, but it came in a loss where the Hawks had an opportunity. And they had chances in that 6-on-4 at the very end of the game with the power play. They had some looks to tie this game up, but unfortunately, Calvin Pickard came up big.
You didn't have enough time to really kind of work it around and look for the options. You had to get it to the net, and they did, and there were some scrambles around the crease area, and, you know, easily could have bounced towards one of the Blackhawk players. Hyman gets the lucky bounce when Draisaitl shoots it in the third period when they had their lone power play opportunity. But, you know, to the teams that work hard, they usually get rewarded for what they do, and unfortunately for the Blackhawks, you know, the effort was there again, but they started to chase the puck around. And when you start doing that, you lose your structure. And very few times in the second and third period did you see them come up with numbers or have offensive zone time on a consistent basis. So, you know, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and harp on the little things that each individual can control. And that is puck management. Those are 50-50 puck battles that the Oilers won the majority of in the last two periods. Those are things that have nothing to do with the coaching staff, have nothing to do with the structure. That's individual effort and compete level.
This was the third time that Bedard and McDavid went head-to-head in the NHL. And Sportsnet had put out a video on their social media page during the game that the Bedard family and McDavid family, they shared a suite tonight at the United Center. And right when the game ended, I kind of panned over to the suite, and both of the dads and the moms were taking pictures with each other after the game. So kind of a cool experience. I know it was hockey night in Canada, but it was in Chicago. But it was nice to see the two Canadian faces of the NHL, the one present, one soon to be in Connor Bedard. Cool to see them both kind of share the same suite here at the UC.
Well, I'm just glad they weren't high-fiving each other.
Yeah, that would have been a little bizarre.
And my mistake, Connor Bedard did not have a shot on goal in this game and was minus two. So, you know, he's only 19, and you got to give him that. But you know, these are games on the big stage against the best players in the world, and you want to perform well. And I know that he's going to be disappointed that he wasn't able to factor into this game as much as he would have liked to. But, you know, some good things and some things you need to work on. I thought Soderblom was pretty good in this game. Oilers got some talented guys that can put the puck in the back of the net, and they were able to do that. But, you know, even going back to the Corey Perry goal, where you had one battle, 50-50 battle going in the corner, and Ryan Donato goes in to help out. But when he goes in, and it was it Vlasic or Crevier? It was one of those two. Seth Jones, I think it was, maybe, in the corner. But the puck was won by, the 50-50 battle was won by the Oilers, and he was able to get it behind Donato, who kind of overplayed that a little bit. You don't want to jump into that play unless you're sure that there's a, you know, it's scrummed up against the boards, and then you can come in and support. But that gave Perry an opportunity on the inside, and that's one thing I thought the Hawks did an excellent job in the first period, was keeping the Oilers to the outside. Well, now all of a sudden you get caught on the outside. Perry's able to take it to the middle of the ice, and he gets an uncontested shot away, because it wasn't Seth Jones was in the middle of the ice, so it was one of the other defensemen against the boards there. But the point being is they gave up the inside of the ice. You know, you don't want to give away good ice to force it positions and plays in bad ice, and the bad ice is on the outside, the good ice is in the middle, and you want to stay inside the dots. And unfortunately they got caught in that play, and again, it's just like maybe being a little bit too overzealous by Donato to try and get in there and try and help out, when just kind of holds your position there and live to fight another day, so to speak.
The Blackhawks were very close to going a second straight game without having a power play. They get one with 52.9 seconds left in this hockey game. That's now three power plays over the last four games for Chicago. In the previous three games, Hawks had 4, 4, and 4. So they had 12, and they capitalized in every single one of those games. That's played a role somewhat over the last four games as well. Chicago not getting as many power plays or drawing the penalties in the first place.
And if you look at Bedard, I mean, that's where he can be the most effective, when he has that opportunity to settle things down in the offensive zone, to use his skill, his passing ability, to use his shot. But when you don't get those opportunities, sometimes it can be very frustrating for the group as well, because, you know, you work hard and you want those power play chances. But I didn't think they did enough in the game yesterday to draw those power plays. And tonight, after the first period, again, you end up chasing a lot of the play there, so you're susceptible to taking penalties rather than drawing penalties. And it was just a sloppy stick by the Oilers at the tail end there. It wasn't a hook or anything like that. It was just a sloppy play that resulted in the high sticking penalty, but Hawks not able to capitalize on it.
The Blackhawks changed up a little bit of their line group. The first line stayed the same. It was Foligno, Dickinson, Teräväinen on the second line. The third line was the interesting one coming into this game, of Colton Dock, Frank Nazar, and then Lucas Reichel drawing back into the lineup after being a healthy scratch last night, playing the wing. And it's like, that is a very young trio against a really good Edmonton Oilers team, and I thought, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. It's going to either go very, very well or potentially very poorly, just given their inexperience. And they were kind of a non-factor, that trio in this game.
Yeah, and for Reichel, you know, he's kind of in the same position as Kurashev. He played just under 8 minutes, no shots on goal, and really you didn't notice him. But the one thing that the Oilers did that you didn't know, but you would think that, you know, maybe because they can split up Draisaitl and McDavid, if they played them on the same line, that would have freed up Sorensen to look for a matchup for those guys. But when you basically had Draisaitl or McDavid out on the ice at any given time, you really didn't get those matchups off faceoffs, because more often than not, those two guys, one way or the other, are the guys that are on the ice to take faceoffs. So, you know, for Nazar and Colton Dock, if you're grading the report card, incomplete type of thing.
Yeah. You know, looking at the ice time, Frank Nazar, just 11 minutes and 6 seconds of ice time. Lucas Reichel had just under 8 minutes. I think Reichel only had 2 shifts in the second period, or in the third period. I saw Bedard take a couple twirls on that line, kind of getting 98 out there in a double shifting type role. Ideally, Nazar doesn't have that many, that low of ice time. I think you want to get him closer to in between 14 and 15. But it was probably more situational, you know, against a really good hockey team in the Edmonton Oilers. So, you know, that trio didn't perform the way I think the Blackhawks had hoped. Do you run it back? Do you change it up again? If you're Anders Sorensen, I'm not sure what the solution is.
No, and I think the coaching staff again is looking for those solutions as well. The players are looking for those solutions. You're just looking for combinations. That are going to work. And Bedard, you know, was quiet in this game. And a lot of times if Bedard is quiet, then Bertuzzi's going to be quiet because he kind of feeds off the plays that Bedard is creating. You know, Mikheyev, I like his game, but, you know, mental mistake there. And, you know, had nothing wrong with the fourth line with Maroon and Donato. I thought they played well. Taylor Hall kind of... you know, half and half, but really the line that stuck out in my mind was Dickinson, Foligno, and Teravainen, and they were excellent, and those guys were all plus two in this game when everybody else was minus, so matchups maybe didn't go in favor of the Hawks in the Draisaitl Bedard. Maybe you're hoping that Nugent Hopkins would be the second line center, and you would have Bedard playing up against a smaller guy than Draisaitl, who's a big man out there and one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. So, I mean, just, again, frustrating. You had opportunities early on in this game, but you just didn't get the job done. And the Edmonton Oilers are a good team, and you expect that even if they have a bad period that they're experienced enough. McDavid's been in the league 10 years, which I can't believe. It's gone that fast. But when you have the firepower that the Oilers have and the knowledge that of how they can win hockey games and how they have to play going to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final last year, you've got to play 60 minutes of great puck management and hope that you get some lucky breaks along the way, and the Hawks didn't in this one.
Alec Martinez, he returned to the lineup. Nice to get him back in. It was probably a little bit of he had to shake off some rust after a 15-game absence. I know he was dealing with the groin injury earlier in the season as well, so not really the first half of the season that he was hoping for, but I think once he starts to get his legs underneath him, I think Martinez back on defense for Chicago is going to be important, because it started to get a little bit too crowded with some of these young players.
Yeah, but you know, he's a stabilizing factor back there, and I thought Kaiser had been playing some pretty good hockey. He played 20 minutes in that game, was even against the Red Wings last night, and he was the healthy scratch with Martinez coming back in. They may have to kind of reevaluate it, but coming into the season, they wanted Martinez and Seth Jones to be that pairing that goes up against the other team's top players more often than not. Vlasic and Crevier have done an excellent job in kind of taking away some of that responsibility. And you know, if you look at it on the defensive side of it, there's still a really young blue line there with Allen at 21. Kaiser, who didn't play, 22. Vlasic, Crevier, both 23. So some youth on there. But if you're going to move forward here, I mean, why not play the young guys there that are going to be a part of the future moving forward? Martinez was brought in to be a veteran guy inside the room. And just for him being around and being on the trips and stuff will help out the younger players on the blue line.
Got another 6:30 start on Monday. I'm digging this
really?
Stretch. Yeah.
We've got, is that a...
Because it's a Calgary... So we got some Canadian TV early, 7:30 in Calgary, 8:30 in Calgary. Is it 2 hours?
No, it's the other way.
No. It's 6:30 Central Time. It's 7:30 Calgary, right?
No.
8:30. It's not a 5:30 game.
What
do you mean the other way? It's not 5:30.
What do you think? It goes the other way?
It's not.
It's 6:30 Central Time, 7:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Pacific Time. 4:30 Pacific time.
Why is it a 6:30 start then? For
I don't know. You told me.
Yeah, 7:30 Eastern. That's what I said. 7:30 Calgary time.
You're talking about Calgary time, which is the other way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll explain it to you later. But
sure, I thought you meant the other way as in like...
No, you told me Calgary time.
Oh, would you look at that? We got to go to a break. Oh, that is a great Troy Murray. Just be here.
I hate correcting you guys all the time, but I'm usually right.
The important thing is it's a 6:30 start on Monday.
5:30 Calgary time. Yeah,
you were a little surprised that I said 6:30.
Well, I didn't know it was 6:30.
You were ready to come here at 7:30. I was going to do the whole pregame show by myself on Monday.
Well, there you go. I'm not going to show up until game time then.
Like, where's Troy?
You're on your own.
Slacker.
That was 7:30 local time.
I'm gonna get to a break so I can go look up my time zones and refresh my memory on some of these.
But you do know that I'm right.
I know that you're right, but I think you know what I meant.
No, because I... No.
All right. We got some Blackhawks sound coming in. Jason Dickinson and Alec Martinez spoke to the media. We'll hear what they had to say. Two guys that are pretty insightful in their post-game media conference. The Blackhawks post-game show is going to roll on after this.
The Draisaitl, top of the right wing circle, fires, stopped in front, rebound, Hyman shoots and scores. At the top of the crease, just like Troy was talking about, Hyman found a rebound and scoops it in behind Soderblom. It's a power play goal, and the Oilers lead for the first time in the game, 4-3.
Back here on the Blackhawks post-game show at the United Center, I just looked up what time zones are, and I got it wrong. Troy got it correct, so another dash one for Charlie. Troy knew what I meant, though. He doesn't have his headset on, but I'm talking about him when he's right here. Troy knew what I meant. Why is it a 5:30 game, a 5:30 Calgary time start on Monday? It's a little weird. Anyway, I digress. Edmonton Oilers knock off the Chicago Blackhawks 4-3. Hawks held two-goal leads in this game, 2-0 and 3-1, and unfortunately are not able to hold on to either lead. Jason Dickinson, he is always extremely insightful in his post-game commentary. Let's hear what he had to say after this 4-3 loss to Edmonton.
What was working for you guys in the first period that wasn't working as well in the second, third?
Felt like we were getting up the ice a lot cleaner. When you're able to get through the neutral zone against them and push pucks deep and sustain a little ozone that way, it's going to bode well for you defensively that you've got them hemmed in their own end, because they don't want to be there. They want to go on the offense. They want to transition. So when you get into a three-quarter ice or half-ice game with them, that's where they excel. That's where Connor and Leon are exceptional at keeping their feet moving, finding the little soft areas to transition back on offense and put you back on your heels. So we couldn't get through the neutral zone in them in the third period especially. I felt like we would chip it out, then they'd take it back, sling it back up and come back down on us. That's really what I felt like.
Is fatigue a factor at all? It seemed like some guys were a little tired after their shifts.
I'm sure it could have been. I don't know that should be an excuse. It's not that hard on your body to play a back-to-back. You know, we prepare for this, we train for this, we do all the right things so that we are ready for the back-to-back. So I don't like using fatigue as an excuse or a crutch. Take shorter shifts and you'll be able to go quicker, longer, more frequently.
Anders mentioned yesterday you guys are breaking the second half into five game segments, and I mean, probably not on track to hit the goals for the first segment right now, but how can that help the team longer term?
Sure we are. Our segment only just started 3 games ago, so right now we're down one. So 2 more games in the segment. If we win the next 2, pretty decent segment. Good start to what we want to create here. So in those segments, there's also small segments per game that, you know, if we can do certain things per each game, we can be satisfied with what we did, not... we can be happy with what we did and not satisfied with the result. So tonight I don't know what the small segment looked like for tonight. I haven't gotten a chance to see results, but there was a lot of good, not enough good obviously, because you know they get that power play goal to put us down one and we just could never respond.
It seemed like you guys weren't as aggressive as you usually are during the penalty kill. Is that a shift in philosophy? Or, you know?
No. They've got some pretty lethal weapons, and the way that they move around is very unique and very hard to build a plan for, because they're so all over the place. You know, Connor will get it on his one-timer side and then he'll walk all the way across to his downhill side, so there's so many looks that they're going to throw at you because they just go out there and play hockey, I think, and they've talked about, you know, this is where I think I'm going to see open ice, this is where I'm going to be able to exploit this, and it's on us to read that, and maybe we were a little bit too passive in trying to read that and thinking too much about, okay, Leon is a really good one-timer from the dot, so we got to keep it away from him. There's a lot of things that go into a lethal power play like that, and honestly, the goal that they scored is, that's a nothing play. That's not something that they want. They probably want. That's maybe their D play. You know, they have so many things that they want to do first, but we cut off a bunch of them, and so Leon starts stepping to the middle, and he's feeling like he doesn't have that pass to Bouchard for a one-timer, so he puts the puck on that simple play that just creates a rebound that can turn into something, and sure enough, it did.
Thanks, guys.
That was Blackhawks forward Jason Dickinson. He went up against McDavid's line pretty much all night. A lot of good, but not good enough, was the quote that kind of stuck out to me of this hockey game. And I think there's been some of those in some of the games this season for the Blackhawks. You do see some good where, you know, they lead the NHL in scoring the first goal of the hockey game, which is absurd to think about, but they don't have much to show for it. I think they're a 500 team when they do score the first goal, and typically that percentage should be significantly higher across the league average. And so, unfortunately, they don't have another... they don't have anything to show for it. Even in some of these games where they do score the first goal and they hold these multi-goal leads, you would think that the Hawks would play themselves into at least overtime or something, but they have not played in many overtime games this season. Just two overtime losses this year. I'm not sure how many wins they have, but they're not as many as I thought they would, given how close some of these games have been down into the third period. Alec Martinez, he returned to the lineup after a 15-game absence from a scary neck injury that took a puck to the neck in the Winnipeg game. It was Anders Sorensen's first game as a head coach with the Blackhawks, and he ended up leaving that game, left the game in a hospital or in an ambulance to go to the hospital because there was some concern that it hit it hit a weird spot on his neck and an important artery. And so good to see him back in the lineup, feeling good enough to be playing again. Let's hear what he had to say to the media after this loss to the Edmonton Oilers.
You guys had control of that game. Yeah, control of that game in the first period. What happened after that point?
I think we got away from our game. You know, obviously, against a team like that, you got to play full 60. They went to the final for a reason. Two of the top players in the world. I think we got away with what made us successful in the first period. And you give a team like that opportunities, they're going to capitalize.
How did you feel in your first game back?
I don't know. Doesn't really matter.
Well, can you tell us some of what was going on with your neck? And
I had residual effects from just taking that puck to the neck. And they were worried about vascular issues and things like that. It was a bit of a scary thing. Obviously, going to the hospital and everything, you know, I'm thankful the doctors handled it appropriately, all the ambulance staff, all the paramedics. So, well, there's those protocols in place for a reason. I'm, you know, very grateful of those guys handling it in such a, you know, good manner.
What's important over these last, I guess, this last part of the season? What do you think you guys can achieve, or just what's important, I guess, from game to game?
I mean, I think you got to take steps as a group. Things like tonight, you know, obviously we had a really good start, you know, get out to a 2-0 lead, and you know, this group has got to, you know, we got to take steps, and we got to learn that you got to put together a full 60 minutes, and that's about details, and that's about habits, and I think that's is lacking in our game, or what's not consistent in our game. And you know, obviously when you're not doing that, you're not you know, you're allowing teams opportunities to get back in, and the longer that, you know, the longer you play with bad habits, you know, the more opportunities you give up and put stress on us. You end up playing more in the D zone. It's a snowball effect, and you get the result that we got tonight.
You mentioned they're two superstars. What can you say about the job Dickinson and his line did to limit the chances for McDavid?
Yeah, I thought they did a good job. Obviously, guys like that, you want to eliminate their time and space, have good gaps. I thought that was a really good job by that group.
Thank you.
All right, that was Blackhawks defenseman Alec Martinez. We got more to get to here on the Blackhawks post-game show, including our save of the game. And we'll hear from Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen on the other side of the break right here on 720 WGN.
Carries down toward the corner. Sets up Jones, high slot with 30. He'll fire, save is made. Loose puck and a scramble. And Pickard lays on top of it to the right of the crease and holds it.
That was tonight's save of the game, which is sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. Arvid Soderblom, I thought he played fine tonight. 30 saves and faced 34 shots. Calvin Pickard allowed 3 goals on 22 shots. I don't think goaltending really played a factor much in this game for Chicago. So it was nice to see Soderblom turn in a fine performance. All right, let's get to Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen. See what he had to say to the media about this 4-3 loss to Edmonton.
So you guys got off to a really strong start, obviously, in the first period. What happened after that point?
You mean in the second period there? They pushed us back. We were on their heels a little bit. They're a good team, right? So they're coming at us in waves, and we had a hard time kind of stopping that. But, yeah, we got out of it.
With the goals against, are you seeing any common themes?
Well, today was a little bit started off the rush, right? Like a lot of them started off the rush and they got some chances and then they were in the zone a little bit, obviously. So, I mean, it's just layers, how we're in the offensive zone, we don't get stuck with numbers below the puck, you know?
Talk about the 5-game segments. Sounds like you're 1-2 so far on this segment. Do you feel like that approach longer term can help even when you have a rough couple of games like these two?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, right?
With the puck possession, it seems like they have the puck for long periods of the time. Is that just a difference in skill level, or would you like to see you guys be more aggressive in terms of knocking them off the puck and going after the puck instead of letting them kind of build possession?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of a combination, right? I thought against Colorado a couple of days ago, we did a much better job of that, right? And then today we got caught a little bit standing a little bit instead of trying to pressure and active, but they're also a good team that has some guys that can execute. But that's an area that we need to improve on for sure.
Was it more fatigue or was it more just being overly cautious against this Oilers team?
I don't know if we were cautious. I think it was more so that we lost some pucks there in the second period that put us in our D zone coverage. And then when you play extended shifts down there, you do get tired, right? So then you naturally kind of hold the middle longer. But those are areas that we'd like to be better at. And obviously, if we can hang on to more pucks in the offensive zone, that would kind of create some more zone time that way instead of having to do it in our own zone.
What do you see from the Martinez-Jones pair?
Yeah, I thought Marty was good. He hasn't played in, almost a month now. I thought he looked good. He made some plays kind of under pressure that we talked about, and I thought that helped the group out.
Jason Dickinson did a nice job of limiting what Connor McDavid could do tonight. What did you think of that line, and what were they able to do against McDavid's line that was successful?
Yeah, they were good. I mean, they scored some goals too, right? Made some plays there, and I thought they did a good job of kind of what we talked about. They hung on to pucks offensively and made them defend, you know, especially in the first period, right? And that's probably the key against those guys, make them stop in their D zone and not take off so quickly. And that was one area I thought that line did really well. And then second period, I thought we were kind of all on our heels a little bit. But overall, yeah, they were good.
What do you think of the first game, either for those young guys?
Yeah, there's some good moments. There's some moments that we, you know, got to improve on, and just understanding who you're playing against and little things like that, and the importance of, you know, winning lines and managing pucks against those guys. But I liked some of the things they did.
That last part we're talking about, knowing who you're playing with and managing pucks, is that kind of a really hard lesson to learn for three kids, like all 22 or something, that like that young, learning about that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody goes through it, right? But that's part of becoming a player, right, to understand that. And overall, I thought they did pretty good, though.
All right, that was Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen talking about this this loss to Edmonton. I think the five-game segments is something that we've been hearing more and more lately over the last couple of days about the Blackhawks trying to break up the season into those small segments and then the segments within the segments. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of transpires the rest of the way. Because it has been. I mean, we hit the halfway mark of the season a few games ago, and so now the focus has to be on the second half and how the Blackhawks are going to help turn this thing around. Even if the results aren't going to be there, just trying to find ways to improve, the way or the not get so caught up into the results, but focus more a little bit more on the process. Okay, we got one more break to get to. Then we're going to wrap up the Blackhawks postgame show after this on 720 WGN.
And here come the Flames. Coronado centers. Kadri the redirect. And he's denied by Gibson. Bouncing puck. Huberdeau scores! Jonathan Huberdeau bats the bouncing puck by John Gibson. The Flames score a power play goal in overtime. They win one for their moms. They win one for Connor Zeri. And they defeat the Ducks 3-2.
That leads us right into our next game preview, which is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Blackhawks are going to be back here at the United Center on Monday night, 6:30 p.m. Central Time puck drop. Just want to clarify that from earlier. The LA Kings are currently in Calgary right now, taking on the Flames. Flames are down 1-0 as we speak. Shots are 14-3 right now, so in favor of LA. Going to be interesting to see who starts in net for Calgary, because Dustin Wolf has been excellent for the Flames this year. The rookie goaltender, 13-6-2, a .914 save percentage and 2 shutouts. And by the way, he also has 3 assists as a goaltender. I think that leads all goaltenders in the NHL. Calgary got off to a hot start this year, 12-6-3, but since then they're 7-8-4, so they've really cooled off. The Blackhawks have been getting the string of backup goaltenders lately, so maybe we get Dan Vladar on Monday for Calgary. Connor Zeri, you just mentioned, or you just heard the sound. He's a first round pick from 2020 by Calgary, third on the team in goals and points. He suffered a knee injury on Tuesday versus Anaheim. He appears to have avoided the worst case scenario, but he's out indefinitely. So tough loss for Calgary, but the Blackhawks are going to be looking to try to bounce back from this loss, or just both weekend losses against Detroit and Edmonton, try to get back in the win column on Monday night here at the United Center. Blackhawks hockey is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Your Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers, Circa Sports Illinois, United Airlines, and Citgo. When you start with Citgo, you're good to go. That's going to do it for the broadcast tonight. Big thanks to our on-site reporter of Jack Heinrich and our production crew of Patrick Hennessy and Colin McCarthy. They were led by our engineers, the Hall of Famer Paul Zerang here at the United Center, and our fearless Colonel Brett Jackson back at the station. For John Weideman and Troy Murray, who brought you the call, I'm Charlie Romeliotis, signing off after a 4-3 Blackhawks loss to the Edmonton Oilers. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Monday night for the UC.